Genesis 30:25-31:37, the 31st talk in a series in Genesis, was presented by David Crabtree on November 3, 2002 at Reformation Fellowship. The last 10 minutes of this recording have been lost. The copyright for this recording is held by Gutenberg College, Inc., 2002. Gutenberg College is a non-profit organization, and contributions may be made at www.gutenberg.edu. This material may be copied and distributed, in whole, for non-commercial and educational purposes, subject to the inclusion of this introduction. All other rights reserved.
We're looking at Genesis, last part of chapter 30, and then we'll be going into chapter 31. My plan is to cover a lot of text today, so I'll be reading a lot. But I would like to do this all in one chunk because it all fits together, so that's just the way it's going to have to be. Last time we talked about the births of the sons of Jacob, the contest that was happening between his wives and that included the concubines. Jacob had agreed originally to work. Remember, he had just come for a short period of time to Haran. The plan originally was, Rebekah said, go to Haran for a few days, and when things calm down here and Esau's anger subsides, then I'll call you back. So originally the plan was just to be gone for a few days. Well, he goes to Haran and decides he wants to marry Rachel, and he has to work for 7 years in order to marry Rachel. Then the wedding takes place, and he finds himself married not to Rachel but to Leah. And in order to marry Rachel, he has to work another 7 years. So the few-day stay turned out to be a 14-year stay. So now, at this point in the narrative, he apparently has worked the 14 years that he had agreed to. And that period of time has come to an end. And now he asks permission to leave, and that's where we pick up the narrative. So this is chapter 30, verse 25. Now it came about when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob said to Laban, let me away, that I may go to my own place and to my own country. Give me my wives and my children, for whom I have served you, and let me depart. For you yourself know my service, which I have rendered you. But Laban said to him, if now it pleases you, stay with me. I have divined that your Lord has blessed me on your account. And he continued, name me your wages, and I will give it. But he said to him, you yourself know how I have served you, and how your cattle have fared with me. For you had little before I came, and it has increased to a multitude. And the Lord has blessed you wherever I turned. But now, when shall I provide for my own household too, also? So he said, what shall I give you? And Jacob said, you shall not give me anything. If you will do this one thing for me, I will again pasture and keep your flock. Let me pass through your entire flock today, removing from there every speckled and spotted sheep, and every black one among the lambs, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and such shall be my wages. So my honesty will answer for me later when you come concerning my wages. Every one that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and black among the lambs, if found with me, will be considered stolen. And Laban said, good, let it be according to your word. So he removed on that day the striped and spotted male goats and all the speckled and spotted female goats, every one with white on it, and all the black ones among the sheep, and gave them into the care of his sons. And he put a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob, And Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. So he has served his 14 years, so by their agreement, he should be free to go. So he comes to Laban and he says, I have filled out my time. Can I go now? And apparently, it was customary that this is the way that the period of service ends. He asks officially for leave from the one that he has done service for. And he is confident, I think, that he has served well. He says, I have served you loyally and faithfully. So not only have I carried out my 14 years of service, but I have done them to the best of my ability. And therefore, he has earned his right to leave. But Laban's response is, don't go. So Laban does not give him the release from his period of service that apparently Jacob was hoping for. Laban has, it says he has divined. That word, it only shows up once in the Old Testament. It's not clear exactly what it means. It could mean he divined. And if so, then Laban apparently has consulted his gods or whatever, and has learned through that means that the prosperity that has come to Laban was through Jacob. The other possibility is it could mean I have prospered. I have prospered, and the Lord has blessed me on your account. In any case, Laban realizes that this prosperity, and apparently it's significant prosperity that has come to Laban over the last 14 years. When Jacob first started working for Laban, Laban didn't have much. We find that out later in the text. And Laban has prospered significantly and has determined that it was Jacob has something to do with it. Apparently, it is the blessing of Jacob's God on Jacob that has made possible this prosperity. So instead of giving Jacob leave, releasing him from his obligation, Laban wants him to stick around because Laban has benefited greatly from God's blessing on Jacob. And he wants to keep him around like a good luck charm so that his prosperity will continue. So he says, name your wage and I will give it. Well, Jacob then goes into another description of what he has done. And apparently what Jacob would like to do, Jacob would like for not to stay and work. Jacob would like to be released from his obligation. But he can't leave without both the release from the obligation and some means of providing for himself and his family. He is penniless. He has nothing. Now, it was customary in ancient times when a servant had fulfilled their service that the master would give him something, give him a small flock or something so that he can get started on his own. And that's apparently what Jacob is appealing to. He's appealing to Laban to let him go and give him a starter flock. So that's why he goes into what he says next, when he says, you yourself know how I have served you and how your cattle have fared with me. For you had little before I came, and it has increased to a multitude, and the Lord has blessed you wherever I turned. But now, when shall I provide for my own household also? So that's apparently Jacob's last attempt to get a release and to get a starter flock from Laban so that he can go. Laban doesn't go for it. Laban is insistent that he remain. So instead of giving him what he wants and what is really due him, Laban says, what shall I give you? Or literally, what shall I pay you? So here the question is, what wages do you want for staying? So he's changed the subject. The assumption is you're staying. Now how much do you want for the work that you will be doing for me? Okay. So Jacob stuck, and presumably he knew that this would be the case. He had anticipated that Laban was not going to let him go. And Jacob has this plan. Jacob knows that Laban's tricky. He's had experience of Laban, and he knows that you have to be really careful in what kind of agreement you come up with so that it has no loopholes. So Jacob's plan is he's going to ask for a portion of the flocks, but it's going to be a small portion of the flocks. That is, he's going to ask for all of those goats and sheep that are spotted and speckled. And since that is apparently a recessive trait, they're only about a quarter of the flock would have those particular qualities. And the nice thing about this kind of a division is neither Jacob nor Laban can do anything about the color of the sheep as they are born. At least that's the way they're looking at it. So nobody can mess with the results. It's not like a brand and somebody cheat on the brand. It's very clear cut. It's something that neither one of them can tamper with. At least that's ostensibly the way it is. Okay. However, Jacob apparently has a scheme whereby he thinks that he can alter the odds. He can alter the percentage of speckled and spotted sheep and goats that are born to the herd. So Jacob's plan is to ask for that portion of the herd, which will come out to be about 25% of the herd, but he has a way of engineering things so that he will get more than 25% of the herd. Okay. Laban thinks this is a good deal. Laban's willing to accept this. And he says, let it be as you say. This is fine. So they shake on the deal. Jacob has agreed to work longer for these wages, that is, this share of the herd. Now, the pronouns get tricky after that. In verse 35, it says, so he removed on that day the striped and spotted male goats and all the speckled and spotted female goats. Who is the he? Well, apparently, as you read on, the thing that makes the most sense is that the he is Laban. But what has happened is, and this is already contrary to the agreement, because in the agreement, what had been agreed was that Jacob would take out all of the spotted and striped. They would be his herd and separate. And then he would get all of the spotted and striped that later are produced by Laban's herd. But Laban goes in preemptively, takes out all of the spotted and striped, and he turns them over to his sons to herd in a separate flock, thereby reducing the odds of his flock producing more lambs with these recessive traits. So already Laban has violated the agreement, which is consistent with Laban's pattern. So he takes these spotted and speckled ones and turns them over to his sons to shepherd and puts a distance of 3 days' journey between them. So there is going to be no mingling between these two flocks. Okay. Hopefully you understand what's going on, what the scheme is here. Okay, verses 37 through the end of the chapter. Then Jacob took fresh rods of poplar and almond and plane trees and peeled white stripes from them, exposing the white which was in the rods. And he set the rods which he had peeled in front of the flocks and the gutters, even in the watering troughs where the flocks came to drink. And they mated when they came to drink. So the flocks mated by the rods, and the flocks brought forth striped, speckled, and spotted. And Jacob separated the lambs and made the flocks face toward the striped, and all the black in the flock of Laban. And he put his own herds apart and did not put them with Laban's flock. Moreover, it came about, whenever the stronger of the flock were mating, that Jacob would place the rods in the sight of the flock in the gutters, so that they might mate by the rods. But when the flock was feeble, he did not put them in. So the feebler were Laban's, and the stronger Jacob's. So the man became exceedingly prosperous, and had large flocks, and female and male servants, and camels and donkeys. Okay. Every time I've looked at this passage, I have puzzled over what's going on here. It seems awfully bizarre. And I did not go back this week and dust off my biology book and brush up on genetics. But there are two explanations in the commentaries as to what's going on here. One explanation is that Jacob is engaging in some kind of magic. And what he's relying on is an old folk belief that at the time of conception, that the visual stimulus of the mother at the time of conception has an impact on the traits of the embryo that is then given birth to. So let's let the mother see this stick that has been carved so that it has stripes, and let's let the mother see striped and speckled sheep, and that will have an impact on what the traits are of the child, of the lambs that are born. Okay. There is no scientific basis to think that that works, but according to this theory, Jacob was just working on this folk belief and is trying to use magic to increase the odds of having spotted and speckled sheep. The other possibility is that Jacob has actually observed something that has a certain amount of scientific validity. And I'll see if I can get this right. There are a couple of things happening. One is that these sticks that have been peeled, apparently there is some evidence that there are certain kinds of bark that produce that contain a chemical that when sheep and goats are exposed to it, it speeds up, it accelerates the rate at which the mothers reach estrus. So what he's trying to do is have two sets of lambs per year rather than one, under the assumption that the sheep would only be separated out once a year at shearing time. And he wants to increase the number of lambs being born and the number of lambs being born when his are still mixed with the others. That's one half. The other half is that there is a phenomenon called hybrid vigor. Hybrid vigor is when you have two parents that typically you have two parents that are purebred and from significantly different gene pools. And when they are mated, the offspring that come from that generally are bigger, faster growing, and more healthy than either of the parents. My wife and I have often speculated that Since she and I obviously come from such different gene pools, there must be hybrid vigor in our family. But the hybrid vigor then would account for the largest, the strongest in the flock. The strongest in the flock would have both one dominant and one recessive gene for this trait. That's the theory. So if you encourage them to breed, you have a higher percentage, you have a higher chance of having spotted and speckled offspring. Okay, so that's the other theory. I personally don't much care. I mean, my suspicion is that Jacob, in his years of working in the field, has indeed observed something. There, he has observed some correlation between what kinds of factors seem to produce more spotted and speckled sheep, and he's using that to his advantage. So what's happened is Jacob has decided that he can come up with a deal that looks to Laban like it will only give him 25% of the flock, but in fact is going to give him more than 25% of the flock because he's been out in the field and he knows what happens in breeding of livestock. Okay, in any case, Joseph prospers, and that's what's really significant here. Whether it's a magic trick that he's tried, or whether it's more knowledge that he's working from, in either case, the fact is Jacob prospers as a result of this arrangement. And he is able to take all of the sheep and goats that are born speckled and spotted, and from those, he trades them for male servants, female servants, and camels. So he's able to build up his household and his holdings significantly. So this apparently happens over a 6-year period of time. And then Jacob decides that it's time to go. We'll read about that in the first 21 verses of chapter 31. Now Jacob heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, "Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what belonged to our father he has made all his wealth." And Jacob saw the attitude of Laban, and behold, it was not friendly toward him as formerly. Then the Lord said to Jacob, "Return to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you." So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to his flock in the field, and said to them, "I see your father's attitude, that it is not friendly toward me as formerly, but the God of my father has been with me. And you know that I have served your father with all my strength, yet your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. However, God did not allow him to hurt me. If he spoke thus, 'The speckled shall be your wages,' then all the flock brought forth speckled. And if he spoke thus, 'The striped shall be your wages,' then all the flock brought forth striped. Thus God has taken away your father's livestock and given them to me. And it came about at the time when the flock were mating that I lifted up my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the male goats which were mating were striped, speckled, and mottled. Then the angel of God said to me in the dream, 'Jacob,' and I said, 'Here I am.' And he said, 'Lift up now your eyes and see that all the male goats which are mating are striped, speckled, and mottled, for I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar, where you made a vow to me. Now arise, leave this land and return to the land of your birth.' And Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, 'Do we still have any portion or inheritance in our father's house? Are we not reckoned by him as foreigners? For he has sold us and has also entirely consumed our purchase price. Surely all the wealth which God has taken away from our father belongs to us and our children. Now then, do whatever God has said to you. Then Jacob arose and put his children and his wives upon camels, and he drove away all his livestock and all his property which he had gathered, his acquired livestock which he had gathered at Padan Aram, to go to the land of Canaan to his father Isaac. When Laban had gone to shear his flock, then Rachel stole the household idols that were her father's. And Jacob deceived Laban, the Aramean, by not telling him that he was fleeing. So he fled with all he had, and he arose and crossed the Euphrates River and set his face towards the hill country of Gilead. Okay, so it has been 6 years that he's been working for Laban under these terms. And he has noticed that there's been a change in the attitudes of Laban and his household towards him, Jacob, and his household. He has heard the sons of Laban saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what belonged to our father, he has made all his wealth. So what he's heard is an exaggeration of what is in fact the case. They're saying he has taken all that was our father's, and from what belonged to our father, he has made his wealth. He's stolen from our father, is essentially the accusation. So this is alarming to Jacob, that his brothers-in-law are thinking this way about him. But it's not only the brothers-in-law, it's also Laban himself. He's noticed that there's been a change in the attitude of Laban himself. Laban has turned against Jacob. And so Jacob is no longer feeling welcome and comfortable here. So, it's at this time when he's already feeling a bit leery of the situation that God appears to Jacob, and he says, return to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you. Interesting, if you remember back to when God first spoke to Abraham, he said, leave the land of your fathers and your relatives and go to the land that I will show you. And then he goes on to bless him and indicate that he will be with him. So now it's return to the land of your fathers, and I will be with you. So it's a similar kind of command on the part of God, just kind of in the reverse. So Jacob, having received this command from God that coincides with him already feeling uneasy about being there with Laban, he calls his wives, Rachel and Leah, out into the field, presumably so that he can talk freely to them. He's getting away from everybody else. They're out in the fields. It won't be suspicious, and yet they can speak freely. And there he decides what he wants to do is explain the whole situation to them and see if they are in agreement with his decision to leave, to make sure that they are on board with him. So he begins to spell it out. And he begins by saying that, look, I don't know if you've noticed or not, but your father's attitude towards me has changed. He's no longer as friendly as he used to be. There's a hostility there. There's a tension that I can feel. And then he goes on to explain that, you know, in the last 6 years, we've acquired a lot of wealth. But it isn't because I cheated your father. In fact, I have served him very loyally. But this is what's happened. He says, and you know that I have served your father with all my strength. Yet your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. However, now here's why he was successful. God did not allow him to hurt me. So no matter apparently what's happened over these 6 years is Laban has seen how Jacob was getting a much higher percentage of the flock than would normally be expected. And Laban's asking the question, what's going on here? And Laban suspects something tricky's happening. So apparently Laban is changing the agreement. And he says, well, not the striped, but the speckled will be yours. And then later, not the speckled, but the striped. And he keeps adjusting what the arrangement is. Now, if Jacob was using breeding tricks that would increase the number that are speckled and spotted, my assumption is that with these changes, Jacob's tricks no longer are going to work as well. That if Laban is going to change it to just the striped rather than the striped and the spotted, I suspect that Jacob's observations about genetics are no longer going to be as successful. But what happens is, no matter how Laban changes the rules, in fact, a higher percentage continues to come out in the form that Laban has designated as going to Jacob. And Jacob attributes that not to his tricks, but to God himself, because Laban had a dream. I mean, Jacob had a dream. Jacob had a dream in which, verse 11, then the angel of the Lord said to me in the dream, Jacob. And I said, here I am. And he said, lift up now your eyes and see that all the male goats which are mating are striped, speckled, and mottled. For I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar, where you made a vow to me. Now arise, leave this land, and return to the land of your birth. So God comes to him in a dream, and I think that the dream is to indicate that, you know why the lambs and the kids that were born were consistently the ones that were in a higher percentage, the ones that were to go to you? It was because I was doing it, not because of your tricks. And Jacob understands that, because I think Jacob's tricks had run out. Jacob's tricks could no longer account for what the outcome had been. And God comes to him and says, I am the God of Bethel. I'm the God that appeared to you at Bethel before you left. And if you remember back at that time when Jacob was leaving, he had fled from Esau and he had spent the night at Bethel, and God appeared to him, and God said, he repeated the blessing that had been made to Abraham and Isaac, but he also said, I will take care of you. Where on this journey that you're going to go on, I will take care of you and I will make sure that you prosper. And this is the same God now that's appearing to him and explaining to him why he has prospered. He has prospered because Yahweh has been with him and Yahweh has been bringing this about. And then he reminds him of the vow that he had made. And if you'll recall, he had made a vow. He said, if you will indeed do what you have said that you will do, then you will be my God. And God is coming to say to him, I've done what I said that I would do. And he's saying now, so now leave, go back to the land. Okay, so why should they leave? His reasons are threefold. One, things have changed here. The attitudes here have changed. God says we should go. And what was my third one? Don't remember what my third one was. Okay. And the wives are in agreement. There's not a problem. Their response is, do we still have any portion or inheritance in our father's house? Are we not reckoned by him as foreigners? What apparently has happened, the custom seems to have been that when a woman was married, there was a price that was paid to the father, a bride price paid to the father for that marriage. But it was customary for a significant portion of that bride price to go back to the daughter to help her get her household set up. Laban took as the bride price 7 years of labor. 7 years of labor for Rachel, 7 years of labor for Leah. But he has not paid any of that to Rachel or Leah. He has used it for himself. So all the labor that Jacob did, that just went into Laban's pocket. So Rachel and Leah are looking at the situation and they're saying, well, he's not treating us like daughters. He's treating us like strangers. He didn't do what is customary. And they look at that as an indication of the alienation that's taken place. And they're convinced by what Jacob has said that the wealth that he has gained has come legitimately. He hasn't stolen it from Laban. That has been his legitimate wages. And therefore, they agree and they say, if God has said to go, let's go. So they're all in agreement and they're ready to head out. They wait for a time when, during shearing time. Shearing time for shepherds in those days was the most important time of the year. It's a critical time. The shearing has to be done in a relatively short period of time, and there's a lot of work to be done. And so Laban takes his flocks, apparently, and goes to a more central location where other shepherds would come and they would all help each other in the shearing and get it done as quickly as possible. That is a 3-day journey from where Jacob is, apparently. So it's at that time when Laban and all of his household has gone away for the shearing that Jacob and his family decide they're going to make a break for it. So they pack up all their stuff, they take all of their flocks, and they head off for Canaan. Without Jacob's knowledge, Rachel goes and steals from her father the teraphim, and it's not crystal clear what the teraphim are. Apparently, they are small idols. They're household idols. And they were religious objects, but they were more than religious objects. They also appear to have been the seal on the inheritance. That is, whoever has the idol has the claim to the inheritance of the father. So by stealing the idol, she's not just taking religious items, she's taking something that gives her a claim to her father's inheritance. Now, it's really unclear. We know so little about the customs that it's unclear whether she could ever have made a legitimate claim on the inheritance just because she has the idols. She is not the one to whom the lion's share of the inheritance would go. In fact, it's not clear whether she would normally have received any inheritance whatsoever. But having taken the idols under these circumstances puts the claim under even less certainty. So it's not clear why she took these. But nevertheless, she took them, and that becomes significant in the next section. Okay. So they're gone, and now Laban is going to find out, and he's going to come after him. We'll read the next section. When it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob had fled, then he took the kinsman with him and pursued a distance of 7 days' journey. And he overtook him in the hill country of Gilead. And God came to Laban, the Aramean, in a dream of the night and said to him, "Be careful that you do not speak to Jacob either good or bad." And Laban caught up with Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the hill country, and Laban with his kinsmen camped in the hill country of Gilead. Then Laban said to Jacob, "What have you done by deceiving me and carrying away my daughters like captives of the sword? Why did you flee secretly and deceive me and did not tell me so that I might have sent you away with joy and with songs, with timbrel and with lyre, and did not allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters? Now you have done foolishly. It is in my power to do you harm. But the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, 'Be careful not to speak either good or bad to Jacob.' And now you have indeed gone away because you longed greatly for your father's house. But why did you steal my gods?" Then Jacob answered and said to Laban, "Because I was afraid. For I said, 'Lest you would take your daughters from me by force. And the one with whom you find your gods shall not live. In the presence of our kinsmen, point out what is yours among my belongings and take it for yourself.' For Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them." So Laban went into Jacob's tent and into Leah's tent and into the tent of the two maids, but he did not find them. Then he went out of Leah's tent and entered Rachel's tent. Now Rachel had taken the household gods and put them in the camel's saddle, and she sat on them. And Laban felt through all the tent, but did not find them. And she said to her father, "Let not my lord be angry that I cannot rise before you, for the manner of women is upon me." So he searched, but did not find the household idols. So Laban takes off as soon as he finds out what has happened, and he catches up in 7 days. Now he's gone, the distance from the area of Haran to Gilead is about 250 miles. So he has made quite a trip, and he has made it fast, and he has a whole group of people with him, his kinsmen. So he's probably got, I don't know, 200 or 300 people with him. If you'll recall back to the story of Abraham, when Abraham went after Lot, he had his household with him, and that was, I think, 320, if I remember correctly, which is unlikely. But it's hundreds. It's hundreds of people. So Laban comes storming up with this large contingent. It had to have looked terribly ominous. And he camps just opposite Jacob. So it has to look really scary at this particular point. But before Laban is able to approach Jacob, God appears to Laban and says, "Don't mess with him." Now, if you'll recall, that happened one other time. It was Isaac, wasn't it? It was Abimelech and Isaac that God appeared to Abimelech after Abimelech had, let's see, was it, he had not taken Rebekah, but he found out that Rebekah was married to Isaac. And was it with Isaac or was it Abraham? I can't remember. Anyway, pardon? Isaac or Abraham? God appears to Abimelech and says, "Don't mess with him, he's mine." Well, this is a similar kind of situation. God appears to Laban and says, don't mess with him. So this has obviously taken a lot of the wind out of the sails of Laban. Nevertheless, Laban is still very upset, and he comes and he just comes in blustering to Jacob. And he says, why did you take my daughters like prisoners of war? Now, language is a wonderful thing. He says, why did you take my daughters? That's a true statement. But it is casting things very differently than if he had said, why did you take your wives? Just by choosing the way that he has phrased it, it creates a very different impression than the one that is really more true to the case. He didn't take Rachel and Leah like captives of war. They came very willingly and very legitimately. They are his wives. And he says, by doing it this way,